All right, so today we're continuing in our journey through the book of Ephesians, and this is the heart of the matter, part 54. Amen, 54. The response was completely overwhelming. All right, Ephesians chapter 3. Now, for those of you that are just picking up right here, I promise you, you'll be okay picking up where you are as we continue down the journey. But let's understand in the setup here to the letter to the Ephesians that we're continuing with Paul dealing with the heart issues from the point of view of understanding that there was an enmity between both the flesh and the spirit, or the worldly ways of doing things and the Torah way of doing things. But there was also then this separation between two groups of people, those that were the Torah observant Israelites and those that were called everybody else, or the Gentiles. And so Paul's been dealing with trying to talk about that, not only here, we did that with the Romans as well, and understanding how these things are supposed to be reconciled together. How do they work together? How is it supposed to function together? And so we're going to continue with that understanding and that issue as we go into chapter 3. Okay, so we're going to read chapter 3 in its entirety, and then we'll see how much we get into maybe even chapter 4 as well. But just remember that that was the setup here as we've been going through, is understanding that in chapter 2, you know, you were dead in your trespasses because of walking the worldly way. Then because of Messiah Yeshua, you were delivered out of all of that. And then, you know, even though before you were Gentiles in the flesh and you were excluded from citizenship of Israel, you were without Messiah and you were strangers to the covenants, but now, because of Messiah, because of his blood, you are brought near. And because of all of this, he's made peace, and he's brought down the partition, and he's brought down and reconciled and abolished the enmity. Let's understand, what was abolished was the enmity between those two mindsets and those two groups of people. And then this was in verse 16, to completely restore to favor both of them, both of who? Well, the inner you to the Torah that you're supposed to be you. In other words, getting you to come together, and also the two groups of people, so that there would be just one group of people, okay? And he said, so that because through him we both have access to the Father. We both, now it's talking about two groups of people. That was verse 18. And we're supposed to be no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens. Okay, so with all of that, now let's go into chapter 3. Because of this, I, Shaul, because of what? Because of all of this process that he just read to you, that we just read, he says, because of this, I, Shaul, am the prisoner of Yeshua Messiah on behalf of you Gentiles. If indeed you have heard of the administration of the favor of Elohim that was given to me for you, that by revelation was made known to me the secret, as I wrote before briefly. In reading this, then, you are able to understand my insight into the secret of Messiah, which was made known to the sons of men in other generations, as it has now been revealed by the Ruach, by the Spirit, to his set-apart emissaries and prophets. Now, this is the secret, so we understand. All this is to say this next verse. So in case you were wondering what he's talking about, here's the secret, that the Gentiles are to be co-heirs, united in the same body, and partakers together in the promise in Messiah through the good news. So all of chapter 2 was to get you to this place of understanding that this is what Paul's talking about. He's not saying that the problem is the Torah and that's taken out of the way so that Israel can become like the Gentiles. He's saying, no, that the enmity is taken away so that the Gentiles can become Israel. See, so people have been teaching this inside out and backwards for way too long. He said, in the promise of Messiah through the goodness of which I became a servant according to the gift of the favor of Elohim given to me according to the working of his power. To me, the very least of all the set apart ones, this favor was given to bring the good news of the unsearchable riches of Messiah among the Gentiles. Now, understand that if we're going to look through, let's take the man at his word. He saw himself as the least of all the set apart ones. So why is it that we have the mainstream of Christianity elevating him into the greatest? He said, I am the least, but I was given this favor. He said, even though I, being the very least of all the set apart ones, this favor was given to me to bring this good news. So this was simply an honoring that he understood through his humbleness that Abba was blessing him with an opportunity, not because of how great he was, but because he was meriting the favor based on his humility and his efforts and his works to try to help the process of what Abba was doing. Okay? So he's bringing this, listen now what the favor was, to bring the unsearchable riches of Messiah to the Gentiles. So I don't know how we can understand this in the context of what you're taught generally in the mainstream of Christianity, which is somehow it's okay to keep acting and living like a Gentile. What he's trying to say, I'm bringing this unsearchable riches to the Gentiles. So what are the unsearchable riches of Messiah? Well, remember, Messiah is the Word. He's the truth. He's the life. He's the walking, talking, living Torah. And hopefully we should understand, as those that are observing and keeping them submissive to the commands, understand the riches of that. Okay, if we understand the riches, and we also understand that without that being revealed to us, we did not have these riches. He's saying, Paul says, Shaul says, my job was to bring these unsearchable riches to the Gentiles. And I love the way he uses unsearchable, meaning this is going to be very clear as we get into chapter 4 as well. You're not supposed to be able to figure this out yourself. And we've said this over and over again for weeks and weeks and weeks. And I've even had people say that I'm almost sounding like I'm whining about it. I'm not whining about it. I'm trying to help you understand that it's a mindset that's causing you to stumble and thinking that somehow you could just figure it out all by yourself. And it's not a judgment against you as you can. Paul's saying these are unsearchable. It requires an appointed person to bring it to you. And he's going to make that even more clear as we get into chapter 4. But let's understand, he's playing that. He says, look, I'm here to share with you this secret. In verse 9, and to make all see how this secret is administered. So the secret is supposed to be walked. The secret that the Gentiles are supposed to be united with Israel to walk as Israel. To see how this secret is administered. So also he's supposed to be demonstrating through his own example to show how this would be administered. Remember, he was the one prior to his calling who was out there attacking and killing the set apart ones. But now he's here to say, look, but I'm going to show you, I'm going to demonstrate through my own life how this is administered. And actually, I want you in Ephesus, because that's who he's talking to in this particular letter, to be that example to show people how this is administered. Because that's actually the role of Israel from the beginning, was to be that city put up on a hill with the light shining, saying, this is what it looks like to be a nation of Israel, the nation of Elohim, his people. And so, well, that's what congregations, by the way, are supposed to be. We're all supposed to be, as congregations, those lights as an example of how this is administered. He says, which for ages past has been hidden in Elohim, who created all through Yeshua Messiah. So all of this is so that now, verse 10, through congregating, through the assembly, through being a body, what kind of a body? A body of Gentile, or I should say former Gentile, and Israel, those born Israel, who have now come together as Israel. And remember, when you come together as Israel, you are as a native born. So you are no longer what you were. He's saying, so that now through this assembly of the joining together, the many-sided wisdom of Elohim might be known to the principalities and authorities in the heavenlies, according to the everlasting purpose which he made in Messiah Yeshua our Master. So let's understand that this is to show the many-sided wisdom, the manifold wisdom of Elohim. So that wisdom comes through the teaching I did called the Identity of Israel, past, present, and future, where you could see in his wisdom how he says, for example, he said to Rehoboam, do not go up there after Jeroboam. This is of me. This split is of me. And Rehoboam didn't understand. Okay, Judah did not, the nation of Judah did not understand why they shouldn't go. But he said, this is of me. This split is of me. Leave it alone. And so we have to see over time the manifold or many-sided wisdom of Elohim as this played out and as things developed and go to the point eventually where Yeshua comes and says, I'm now going to reconcile in me that enmity and I'll help to bring that back into one, to restore that into one. This goes also to the picture of Ezekiel 37 of the two sticks coming together. And in that same chapter, it talks about, and one will be there as their king. So it points to David, but that's a way of pointing to Yeshua, with David as their king. Okay? This is Mashiach ben David. And so what we see going on here, he's saying, look, all of this is to show you the wisdom that has been playing out for all of these centuries, because he says, look, which for ages past had been hidden. In other words, this has all been happening where you didn't understand, but you got to watch it happen. And now, hopefully looking back, we can see and understand what the point was, the beauty and the wisdom in what Abba did and how he handled things and what he allowed and what it purposed in his purposes. He says, in whom we have boldness and access with reliance, this is still talking about Yeshua, in whom we have boldness and access with reliance to a belief in him. He says, I pray therefore, therefore means because of all this stuff, because of these things, I pray that you do not lose heart at my pressures on your behalf, which is your esteem. In other words, I'm going to get a lot of heat for what I'm trying to do to get this message out. He says, do not lose heart because you see what's happening to me. Don't lose heart when you see what's happening to other members of the body. Don't lose heart when it's happening to you. He says, you're supposed to have boldness and access with reliance through belief in him. He says, for this reason, I bow my knees to the Father, our Master Yeshua Messiah. Now, notice what he's saying. I bow my knees not to Messiah, but to the Father of Messiah. That's not to say that not every knee should bow then to Messiah, but he's still acknowledging that there's a higher authority. Because Yeshua wanted you to always know that he didn't want you pointing towards him. The Father says, I'm going to give him all authority and every knee should bow. But the Son says, I want you to focus on the Father. And Shaul is saying, look, for this reason I bow my knees to the Father of our Master Yeshua Messiah, from whom all fatherhood in the heavens and earth is named. In order that he might give you, this is why he's bowing his knee. He's bowing his knee so that the Father might give you according to the riches of his esteem by power, to be strengthened in the inner man, to be strengthened in the inner man through his spirit. So the whole point was so that you would be strengthened in this new walk. Remember, he's talking to both the Jew and the Gentile, or I should say former Gentile, saying that you're going to need to be strengthened in your inner man. The Jew, because the rest of the Jewish community is not going to like that you're now merging together with these Gentiles, quote unquote. On the other hand, the Gentile community has to accept and embrace that they are no longer Gentile, that they're no longer strangers, but they're now a part of the Commonwealth of Israel. He says, so you're going to need strength because you're going to be attacked from both sides. Neither side's going to accept you. Neither side's going to want you anymore. You're going to be under all kinds of pressure. He says, so this whole point was in order that he might give you according to the riches of his glory, of his honor, by power to be strengthened in the inner man through his spirit. Now remember, that inner man has to be the inner man that is now coming into congruence with him. That inner man is not being strengthened in continuing Gentile practices and just claiming you believe in Messiah. Because now as part of the Commonwealth of Israel, you understand or should understand there's only one law. There's one law for those that are of Israel and those that have joined themselves to Israel, and they are now treated as a native born. He says, that the Messiah might dwell in your hearts through belief, having become rooted and grounded in love. Now let me stop there for a second. So the Messiah might dwell in your hearts. So the Messiah is to dwell in your hearts. This is also part of all of the verses that we talked about in the previous 50-something parts of this teaching, showing that it's the Torah that's supposed to dwell in your hearts, that Yeshua is the embodiment of what Torah is all about. You know, we've talked about over and over again that Torah is supposed to do three things. It's supposed to bless you. We read that in Deuteronomy and other places. It brings blessing. It's supposed to keep you safe. Let's face it, if people are keeping the commandments, you are much safer than if they are not. Right? Because nobody's going to steal from you or murder you or commit adultery against your spouse or whatever it is. But the last thing is the key. It's the vehicle that transforms you from what you are into what he is. Because he is the goal, right? The goal of the Torah is Messiah. In other words, if you keep the commandments, the goal is that it makes you and transforms you to be like him. But to do that, you must have that Messiah must dwell in your heart. When it talks about laying up the Torah in your heart, laying up Messiah in your heart, same thing, same idea, just a more full context. We're not just laying up a bunch of rules in our hearts. We're laying up the full context of what that's all about, that it's teaching you to be like him. It's that transformative vehicle. He says, so here you are, that having Messiah might dwell in your hearts through belief. having become rooted and grounded in love. Now, the whole idea of rooted and grounded in love, I'm going to tell you that there's a teaching that you need to listen to. I got to redo it, actually. It's been a long time, called Love and Torah. It's actually the oldest teaching I've ever done. I think it was the very first teaching I did in 1999 or so in Nashville when I was first doing my first solo teaching, you know, instead of just doing a Torah portion teaching. I think it was Love and Torah. And in that teaching, you'll see that almost every single place the word Torah appears, it's in the context of love. If you love me, keep my commandments. And you shall love Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart, with all your might, with all your being, and keep his commandments. There's going to be verses over and over again where the linkage of love and Torah observance and Torah submission is completely linked together. So what you're seeing here is it's saying, look, you're going to become rooted and grounded in love, understanding that it's love to teach you the right way to walk. It's love to teach you how to treat him. It's love to tell you how to treat each other. All of this has to be in that context of love. In order, verse 18, all of this is in order that you might be strengthened to firmly grasp with all the set apart ones, what is the width, the length, depth, and height? The width, length, what is that all about? We're going to go there with not geometry, no. We're going to take like you would go to a clothing place, right, where they measure you, like a tailor, and we're going to go out, or a seamstress, and we're going to measure you because we want to know how wide and how long and how tall and how deep. What is it talking about? Understanding the fullness that is Yeshua. What is the fullness? We're talking about he says, I am the truth. So we need to understand what that means. What's the fullness of what truth is? He says, I am the way. The way to what? What does that all mean? I am the way. He says, and I am life. We see that he is the word. We see that the word put on flesh, John 1:14. We see that the word is truth, Psalm 119, verse 142 and 160. He says, I am that truth, the Torah's truth, and the truth put on flesh. The word put on flesh. He said, all of this is in order that you might be strengthened with the set apart ones, understanding what is the fullness of Mashiach, the width, the length, the depth, and the height, to know the love of Messiah, which surpasses knowledge, in order that you might be filled to all the completeness of Elohim. And so, where you see the word completeness there, that's going to have a lot to do with even like the Hebrew underlining word of tamim or tam, which is saying, look, that you could be filled with all the integrity, all the perfection, all the integrity that is Elohim. So all of this is to that purpose. And so how can you read all of this and think that you could still keep eating pork and shrimp and keeping Sunday and Christmas, Easter and all that stuff? How could that possibly fit into this verse? That you're going to, the whole point of all is this, so that you can understand the depth and the width, the length, the height, etc., of Messiah, to know his love, in order that you're filled with the completeness. See, Christianity just loves to say that he completed it so you don't have to. No, he completed it so you know what it looks like. He completed it so, you know, here, have you ever done something with your child where you're making a craft or doing something and you make one so he can see or she can see what it's supposed to look like? That's what he is. He's the fullness or completeness to show us what it looks like. Not so that we don't have to do it, so we understand what it looks like if we do it. And the more we do it and realize that we're not like that, we know what needs to be fixed, what needs to be adjusted, what needs to be changed and corrected. He says, verse 20, and to him who is able to do exceedingly above what we ask or think, according to the power that is working in us, to him be honor in the assembly by Messiah Yeshua unto all generations forever and ever. Now, we have this word glory or esteem in most translations. I think honor is a better word there. Only problem is we don't know what honor is. We're an honorless society. We're a shameless society. We don't understand honor. But let's put the word honor in there and say, look, to him be honor in the assembly. Is it honoring to him when we break his commandments? Is it honoring to him when we do what the nations around us do to worship their gods and we do that to worship him? Is it honoring to him? I would say no. And so that's a really key part of this whole section that he's reading in through. And remember, this follows out of chapter 2, where he's giving the comparison about you were once, estranged. You were once separate. You were once outside of the covenant. You were once without Messiah, but now you've come near, and now you can join into, and in Romans 11, it talks about being grafted into the root, not that the root gets grafted into you. So you become them. They don't become you. What we see, though, is in Christianity, as we see in general, is that most of the time, the people have come in, act like they still acted before they came in with their normal general behaviors. Now, I'm sure they've broken some bad habits. They're not treating people the way they maybe used to do. Some addictions are gone and that kind of thing. Yes, that's all great. But that doesn't include the part of obedience and submission to authority. And he says, look, all of this was to say, to him be the honor in the assembly, by Messiah unto all generations forever and ever. That includes us. That includes us. Okay, let's get into chapter 4. And we're going to break this down a lot as we get into chapter 4. I've got a lot more notes for chapter 4. But hopefully you can understand as we go through chapter 3, all of this was about taking what was going on in chapter 2 and bringing it into the idea in chapter in verse 17 of that the Messiah might dwell in your hearts through belief. And belief, we remember we talked about over and over again, has to do with simply the actions that you take demonstrate those beliefs. So he says, look, if you're going to bring Messiah into your heart, and remember we talked about the process, a thought starts out right in our minds. We have a thought. It then goes eventually, if we hold on to it long enough, into our heart where emotion is attached to it. And then that emotion and that thought that's now in our heart eventually manifests as an action, because that's we start to really believe strongly in the thing we thought and had emotion attached to it. And then it manifests as an action. We do those actions repetitively over time, and it becomes a habit. And those habits over time become a destiny. And what he's saying is, look, you need to have Mashiach dwell in your heart through belief so that you're going to do what? Eventually take actions which form habits that lead to the kingdom. That's the destiny. Okay? And you have to do this by becoming rooted and grounded in love. And Torah is love. Elohim is love and Torah is Elohim. It is his heart expressed in his guidance. Okay, that's his heart expressed. Oh, no, those are the brutal, ugly commands that were against us. No, they're not. This is his heart. This is his love. It says in verses, what other people is there that have Elohim so near to them and give them out of his own mouth his instructions? This isn't a curse. This is an honor. This is a high, extreme honor that he would give these things. And by the way, the Jewish community absolutely understands that. They embrace that they were chosen to receive this incredible gift and honor, and they cherish it. They cherish it. Okay? There is a scene in, was it called The Frisco Kid with Gene Wilder? And in that movie, he gets caught at one point, and he's a rabbi going out west. And the guy is trying to understand this thing he has for this Torah scroll. And he said, well, would you give me, you know, this or that for the Torah? And he kept saying, you know, I'll give you anything for the Torah. There's nothing I would. He said, would you die for the Torah? He says, yes, for the Torah. I mean, this is his understanding. Now, he was almost in tears at that point because the guy was about to basically kill him. But he was not going to put anything above his honoring the gift that Elohim had given him as a Jew. But guess what? It's not just for the Jew. It's for Israel and those that would join and graft in. And so do you appreciate that honor? And we're supposed to then, to him, give him back honor from the assembly. The assembly should be honoring him by our understanding of embracing the honor he gave us. But there's no honor. And there's no shame. Because we take it upon ourselves, in general, in our self-sovereignty, to take what he gave us and mold it into our own image of how we want it to be and what it should be. And then we end up deciding what we're going to do or what we're not going to do. We're not submitting to his authority. And we're going to see now that Paul's going to really shift deeply into dealing with authority problems as we get into chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 1, I call upon you, therefore. Now, the therefore, again, brings you to the, he's reminding you, I'm calling upon you because of everything I just said, being in that you understand what I just said. Therefore, I, the prisoner of the master, I'm calling upon you to walk worthily of the calling with which you were called. Now, I don't understand how, is that not in every translation, this idea of walking worthily? But people are being told all over the place, there's nothing for you to do. He's done it all for you. What does it mean to walk worthily? What does it mean to walk in a worthy manner? What does it mean to bring forth fruits worthy of repentance? What is this worthiness thing? He's saying, look, I call upon you, therefore, to walk worthily of the calling with which you were called, with all humility and meekness, with patience, bearing with one another in love. Now listen, being eager to guard the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. I see the opposite. I see the body in the opposite. I see that they're eager to split. They're eager to argue and fight. There's no eagerness to guard unity. Where's the eagerness to? He said, I call upon you with humility and meekness and patience, etc., which, by the way, are all from the fruit of the Spirit, Galatians 5:22, that you be eager to guard the unity of the Ruach in the bond of peace. But I'm not seeing that. Maybe you're seeing it. I'm not seeing it. One body, one Spirit, as you also were called in one expectation of your calling. One Master, one belief, one immersion, one Elohim and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. Now, he's trying to say there's supposed to be echad, not just one little, it's echad. We're supposed to be echad, as if when a wife and a husband come together, they should be looked at as one, even though they're two. On the same page, of the same mind, going in the same direction. You know, if they're in a boat, the idea of rowing in this, you know, together in the same direction. Well, he's saying here, look, we should be one body, one ruach, okay? One calling, one master, etc. But are we seeing that in the body today? No, there's a problem. And I think he's going to explain what, in the next few verses, he's going to explain where the problem is. He says, but to each one of you, to each one of us, favor was given according to the measure of gift of Messiah. So he's saying, look, yes, individually, each one of us was given a measure of favor, a measure of the gift of Messiah, but yet that was supposed to be a part of bringing us together into echadness, not to have us be all individually, you know, I'm right, you're wrong, and there's all the splitting and all that kind of stuff. Okay? He says, that is why it says, verse 8, it says, that is why it says, when he went up on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts to men. But what does he went up mean? Except that he also first went down into the lower parts of the earth. He who went down is also the one who went up far above all the heavens to fill all. Did all of you understand that? No. By the way, how many of you have read, in any extensive way, have read any Talmud? Few of you. How many have read any Kabbalah? Very few. Doesn't that sound very much like Kabbalah? Okay, so here's Shaul, a student of Gamaliel, okay, who is trying to use very much the same type of language of understanding that the sages used in trying to explain verses that they would read. Now, am I endorsing Talmud? No. Am I endorsing the Kabbalah? No. I'm just giving you an idea that there's no doubt that this is worded exactly. A Kabbalistic Jew would read this and understand exactly what Paul's talking about. It's written exactly in that language. So am I going to explain it to you that I understand? No, but I'm just saying is there. You go and look for the verse where it actually says this exact thing, and you're not going to find the verse where it says this exact thing. Okay, this is extrapolation going through a sowed level of understanding of what verses say. So when he's talking about this, this is the kind of stuff that you go, oh. This is why I've told people who tell me, well, I've read Kabbalah. I said, really? Did you understand it? And if they say yes, I know they didn't read it. Because it's written like this. In this more esoteric, sort of deeper, hidden way of wording it, that it's expected that for you to understand it, that you would have already studied the Tanakh and known the Tanakh inside and out, front and back. That's the Old Testament. That you would have understood the Talmud front and back, inside and out, and that then you would have a context to understand what the writers meant when they were writing the other writings. So Shaul is trying to explain to these people, coming from an understanding where he was, where he understood all of this. He absolutely understood all of these writings. So let's understand that sometimes Paul will say something that I may not be qualified, and none of you may be qualified to understand. So we may just have to go, okay, not sure what to do with that. Let's continue and see if we can understand other things as we go further, because it's in that framework. It's a language that was meant to be understood only by a few and with training. But let's continue so we can understand as we go forward. So he said, and he himself, verse 11, right after you said this thing about going up on high, leading captivity to captive, and giving gifts to men, and what does it mean he went up, but he also went down? Okay, there's a thing in understanding the upper realms. This is, again, the Kabbalah and the lower realms. I'm not trying to teach you Kabbalah, I'm just giving you an understanding that we live in the lowest realm, so to speak, according to that, as the humans, and that there's this difference between these two kingdoms, these two realms, and how they interact with each other, and the idea of us eventually elevating to that realm. Really, he's coming here. We read that in Revelation 21. But understand that this is why we get to verse 11. And he himself gave some as emissaries, and some as prophets, and some, now understand, these are positions. So the emissaries, we can call them apostles, the shaliach or shaluchim. Some as prophets, the Navi or the Nevi'im. Some as evangelists, and some as shepherds, and some as teachers. Okay, so he gave these positions. Now these positions, and I'm going to do a whole teaching, maybe it gets into this a lot deeper. These positions are not vertically hierarchical. Easy for me to say, okay? In other words, it's not like the emissary, then the prophet, then the evangelist, then the shepherd, then the teacher. These are just different roles, okay? The shaliach, or the emissary, is one that is sent out. That's what the Hebrew word means, one that is sent out. And so they're the one that goes out with the message. So like Shaul, he went out. The ones that, when Yeshua sends them at the end of Matthew 28, right, he says, go out to make disciples. What were they? They were all apostles. Now, we know there are specifically 12 significant apostles, but they were all apostles, the 70, the 120. They were sent out as emissaries. The Hebrew would have been a shaliach, or the plural would be shluchim, okay? Now, there's also prophets. What do prophets do? Prophets declare the word of Abba, or the word of Yahweh, with authority. They speak the word with authority. Do prophets speak the future? Not always. That's not really their job. Their job is simply to speak the word of Yahweh with authority. Moses was a prophet. We're looking forward to a prophet that's greater than Moses. We know that's Yeshua, right? That's what Moses was talking about. What did Moses do? Well, sometimes he said, in the future, you guys are going to blow this and you're going to get taken into captivity, blah, blah, blah. Mostly, what did he do? He said, keep this, don't do that, do this, don't do that. And he spoke with authority. Okay? So prophets speak the word of Yahweh with authority, inspired speaking. Then the next one after that we see are evangelists. So what are evangelists? If you're in the church, it's like some sort of the big to-do person that's coming into town that we need to have a huge meeting for. That's not an evangelist. Okay? An evangelist is like the spiritual version of a marketing person or promoter. Okay, most of you have your moments when you're very evangelical in the scriptural terms, where you are out there telling everybody, hey, you got to hear this teaching, or you need to come hear this guy speak, or you need to come to our group. We're having just a blessed service. That's the heart of an evangelist. When a teacher posts on Facebook and you then immediately reshare it, that's the little evangelist in you that's doing that. Okay? Because I have over 3,000 people that I friended on Facebook because of the ministry, etc. And when I post a teaching, not every one of them reshares it. That's not a condemnation on the ones who don't. The evangelists are the ones who do. So it's not a big deal title. It's simply the person. Look, if a shaliach came into town, started speaking and trying to gather together lost sheep and put an assembly together, the shaliach would then have somebody get excited about it and tell everybody, hey, you got to come and hear this guy. That's your evangelists. The promoters, the guys who get excited. Okay? So it's funny, the church has it backwards. The guys promoting the speaker coming are the evangelists, not the speaker who's coming. Okay? The speaker who's coming is probably going to be like a shaliach or a prophet or a teacher who's very good. But the evangelists are the ones who are promoting the event, trying to get people to come here, come and listen. Then we have shepherds. So what does a shepherd do? A shepherd is one who sits there with the flock day after day, making sure that they're safe, they're fed, they're taken care of, getting them safely from point A to point B on a daily basis. Okay? So the shepherd is going to take things that are coming from the prophet, that are coming from the shaliach, and say to the people, let me help you to guide you in doing this every day on the daily walk. They're the ones that are there in case one of the sheep gets astray to go chase it down and bring it back, or gets caught in a ditch to lift it out. All of those daily activities. The one that's daily loving on the assembly. You're not going to get that from the emissary or the prophet necessarily. That's not their role. Okay? So while the prophet's the one with the big hammer smacking your toes, the shepherd's going to come over while you're sitting there holding your foot in your hand going, it's okay, we're going to get through this, and I'm going to help you, and we're going to figure this out. Okay? That's where the shepherd comes in. Okay? Then we have teachers, because teachers need to be there to teach us the basics. Okay? Teach us the mechanics, the how, the when, the why, you know, the where, and all those kind of things. So you have to have some basic instruction. See, the prophet's not as concerned about basic instruction as making sure to get you to do it. Do you understand what I'm saying? The prophet's the one crying aloud and sparing not, saying, okay, you know you've been taught. The teachers are teaching you. The shepherds are nurturing you, but you're still not doing it. That's what the prophet's going to be saying. So now let's understand that he gave some, not everyone, to do these different roles. Let's understand why we have these roles in verse 12. The purpose of these positions is for the perfecting of the set-apart ones. So the purpose of these guys, their jobs, their role, is to help perfect the set-apart ones. And by perfect, meaning to get them to walk with fullness of integrity as they're transforming into the image of the Son. So that's their role, the perfecting the set-apart ones. For what purpose? So that they can work the service. So they could do the work of service to a building up of the body of Messiah. So this whole point is to build up the body of Messiah and to help the body become more and more like Messiah. Okay? Verse 13, and this is to be done for a couple of weeks, a couple of months, a couple of years. No, until we all come to the unity of belief and of the knowledge of the Son of Elohim, to a perfect man, a man filled with integrity, to the measure of the stature of the completeness of Messiah. Okay, are we there yet? Okay, if we all agree we're not there yet, that was kind of underwhelming. Are we there yet? All right. So if we're not there yet, and it's supposed to be in place until we get there, then we still obviously need emissaries, prophets, evangelists, and shepherds. Can we agree? And why do we need them? Because they're supposed to make all see how this secret is administered in verse 9 of chapter 3. That's part of what this is all about. It's part of this idea of saying that you're not supposed to necessarily figure out these unsearchable things all by yourself. You need guidance to make sure you've understood it correctly. That doesn't mean don't make the effort, but it means that there needs to be someone to go to and say, this is what I figured out. Am I on the right track? Now he says, look, you need these guys until we all come into the unity of belief. Are we in the unity of belief? Not even close. And of the knowledge of the Son? No. Have we become a man filled with integrity, a perfect man? And it says, to the measure of the stature. Okay, the measure of the, this is the goal. The goal of all of this is being, the goal of being in this thing is to become a perfect man as measured against the stature. The stature, the definition of stature is the importance or reputation gained by ability or achievement. So we're trying to measure up against this achievement and reputation that is Messiah. Because what did he achieve? Perfection. The perfection of what? Walking in the fullness of embodiment of Torah. Okay, so he's saying, look, he says, look, we are doing all of this to strive to be filled with integrity and to come up to the measure of the respect, the reputation, and the ability and the achievements that are the completeness that is Messiah. So that's the goal that should be of what the apostles, the prophets, the teachers, the shepherds, they're all doing, the evangelists, they're all trying to work towards that goal of getting the body to do what? To be measured up against the measurement that's Messiah and not be found wanting. And not be found wanting. Okay, and that's where we are headed. He says, now listen now. He says, verse 14, Now, again, this is why he's talking about this leadership structure. He says, so that we should no longer be children. See, without leadership and trying to figure everything out just on our own, isn't that what children do? How many times have you tried to help your child? The child's like, no, 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 I can do it. I got it. I understand. And they don't. And you know they don't. And they're like, oh, no, no, no. And they're like, oh. And they say, please stop. Just listen to me. I know what you're trying to do and it's not going to work. And they look at you like, no, no, no. That's a child mentality. He said, we should no longer be children in our approach to all these things, tossed and borne about by every wind of teaching, by the trickery of men and cleverness unto the craftiness of leading astray. So here in verse 14, we're talking about, so why? Why all this leadership being talked about? Why all of this process being talked about? He said, so that we should no longer be children, tossed about, etc. See, the leadership has a role in protecting the body from wrong teachings, from trickery, from cleverness and craftiness of men who can lead you astray. But we have a lot of leadership out there that's afraid to mention other things that are out there and afraid to point things out and say, that's something you probably don't need to be messing around with. The problem is, the few that do point it out do it in a judgmental way. We should not be judging those that they're actually thinking that they're trying to lead you astray. Mostly they're leading you astray out of ignorance. They don't know. Because we've talked about this like until, you know, ad nauseum here, that we are being taught generally by people who have less than 5 years of understanding of this stuff. I don't care how many years they had in the church. That only makes it more challenging for them to understand this stuff. But as far as actually walking out Torah and being submissive to the commands, generally our teachers out there that are claiming to be teachers have less than 5 years to 6 years experience at the most. Very few have any more than that. And so they're not trying to lead astray. There's no trickery necessarily. But the enemy, with all of his trickery, is trying to get you to follow and buy into it so that you're totally coming under a wrong covering, thinking that you've arrived. Which, by the way, that was the same problem you had in the church. You thought you arrived, only to find out you hadn't. Now you're about to find out that you hadn't again. Be careful. This is the purpose of all of this, so that the leadership with its role, if you allow them to, can help in protecting you. Now, by the way, that means that all of this starts with you. You must find anointed, appointed leadership. That's your job. The leadership can claim anything they want to claim. It doesn't matter what I claim about myself. You, through the Ruach, through prayer, through asking the Father's help, you must find, there's got to be on this planet, anointed, appointed leader. Because you know why? It says that it's been put out there, that he gave some to do these things until. That means there must be people now, right now, available to do these jobs. Because we're not there yet. So there must be anointed emissaries, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers that you can find. But it's your job to find them. You must find them. Why? Otherwise, you are potentially going to be a child tossed to and fro, born by every wind of doctrine and teaching. And susceptible to the trickery and cleverness and craftiness and leading astray. He says, but maintaining the truth in love. That's what these guys are to do. These leaders are supposed to help you maintain the truth in love so that we grow up in all respects into him who is the head Messiah. So we're supposed to grow up into him. In other words, to become like him, to be transformed and conformed into him. He says, because it's from him, from whom the entire body, joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the working by which each part does its share, causes growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. So this is all to say that everybody has a role. By the way, even if you're not one of these five things, you know, called the fivefold ministry thing, whatever, it doesn't matter if you're not one of these five things. You have roles. Some of you have a great role of being hospitality directors. You, when people come in, you come over and welcome them and love them and make them feel like they're a part of things. That's an important role. Because you know what? Some of these guys, like the prophet, he's probably not very good at that. It's not his focus. Some of you are really good at listening. Sometimes people need to just get stuff out. And that's a great role. Okay, I do that. I'm not very good at it. I have to actually focus. In other words, it's not natural. When I say I'm not good at it, I mean it takes, some of you, you must understand that these roles are things that you do effortlessly. In other words, it's natural to who you are. And so each one of us must walk in the congruence of what he gave us to do. And realize that just because you're not one of these five doesn't mean that you have to be all frustrated that you have to be one of these five. These five have their roles. You've got your own role. Whatever that role is. If you don't know what it is, find that anointed appointed and talk to them about it. Maybe they can see in you some of the things that you come about naturally, that you do very well naturally as a gift. Because you may not even realize how much you're blessing people because you don't think that what you're doing is that big a deal. But the people you do it for do. Whatever that is, those people think it's a big deal. And so you need to know. But he says that all of this is so that the body can be joined, knit together, and that each one is going to share what has been given to do for the edification or building up of itself, the body, in love. Now, that was all down to get to verse 17. Verse 17 is going to take us right back to chapter 2. He says, so I say this. Okay, so this is what I say and witness in the Master that you should no longer walk as a Gentile. The whole point of this is to say that we are no longer walk as Gentiles walk. So how do Gentiles walk? He's saying, well, they walk in the futility of their mind. In other words, have any of you ever been frustrated? Especially with the scripture, trying to understand things? Or frustrated because you thought you figured something out and walked in it, it didn't work? He's trying to tell you that that's what Gentiles do. They walk in the futility of their mind. In other words, there's a way that seems right to a man, and that way leads to death. And so don't walk in the futility of a way that's never going to work and figuring it out for yourself. That's where you need to go and find that anointed, appointed, and ask, is this the way I'm seeing it? Is this right? I need guidance. I need counsel. By the way, the anointed, appointed is not the genius of the group. It should be the one who's able to, when he talks to you, get out of the way and allow the Ruach to speak. That's what you're looking for. Not the guy who's so smart and he just knows everything, blah, 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 but who, when you talk to them, it's not him talking. He's simply the vessel. I'm not talking about possession or anything. I'm just simply saying that he's allowing the Ruach to inspire the speech. Because that's what a prophet does. That's what these other guys do, is they have inspired speech. We have verses that say, don't worry about what you're going to say when you're brought before, you know, the authorities, etc. Because if you relax, he will give you the inspired speech. Okay? And so like when I'm up here now, I try very much to get out of the way so that it's not me. All right, so that it's him speaking through me so that you hear what he wants you to know. Now, so he's saying, look, all of this was to tell you that you are to no longer walk as a Gentile. Is that not in every Christian's Bible? So then how were they doing Christmas and Easter and Sunday and all the Gentile things? It says no longer walk as a Gentile, which is total futility. In other words, it doesn't work. It's a waste of time. It will not get you where you want to go. You want to get to the kingdom. Guess what? Walking as a Gentile isn't going to get you there. He says, because they've been darkened in their understanding, having been estranged from the life of Elohim because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. So where do the Gentiles end up in trouble? He said, well, first of all, there's ignorance and there's a hardness of heart. See, he's got to call you. He's got to open your eyes, open your ears, and soften your heart. See, a lot of people out there could be maybe called now. I'm just guessing according to this verse. But they're too stubbornly hard in their heart and just wanting to be walking in the futility of, I know, I don't need anybody to tell me. I know. That's their problem. And he can't work with that. That's why he allows so much to happen to you that would have you eventually end up face up, laying on your back. Because at that point you realize, okay, my way didn't work. But you know what? Just getting tripped and stumbling, that might not be enough. Tripping and bruising a knee or scraping an elbow, that might not be enough. He says, if you disobey me, I will curse you 7 times. And if you continue to disobey, I'll curse you 7 times more. And on and on. So when these things happen to you, they're wake-up calls. If you're not going to listen, he's going to keep allowing it to happen until you realize that your futility of your mind is not working, that it's futile. Then you finally look up and go, okay, I get it. I'll do whatever you say. My way does not work. Do you ever wonder why he's going to allow things to get to be so bad that if not intervened at that moment, there would be no flesh left alive? I think the reason is because there's still going to be people going, you know, if you left us alone, we'd have figured this out. There has to be absolute clarity that without his intervention, there was no surviving. Because the ego and the pride and the vanity in man requires that, to break it of that, to create, to get us to be humble, to get us to find that place of humbleness. We actually may need to be humbled. All of us who do not voluntarily submit ourselves, he's going to humble you one way or the other. I recommend plan A, you choose to do it. Plan B is much more, it's not fun, much more challenging, because he's going to humble you. And so he's saying, look, when you were Gentile, you were darkened in your understanding, you were estranged from the life of Elohim. In other words, you had, your relationship was not there because, right, remember, sin separates you from him. And this is all because of the ignorance that was in you. He says, look, in verse 19, who having become callous and having given themselves up to indecency to work all uncleanness with greediness. And by the way, greediness, I think, simply means doing what you want. I'm doing it because I like it, because I want to, and that's what I mean. Not greediness, we normally think of it as like monetary gain. It just talks about personal gain there. I think he's talking about the greediness, meaning getting what you want. Okay? Wanting what you want and getting what you want and having this callousness towards him, towards the truth, that you are willing to give yourself up to indecency and to work all uncleanness. Now listen to verse 20. He says, look, but you have not so learned Messiah. You've not learned Messiah that way. I think if Paul was alive today, he'd go from church to church to church and say, hey, you have not so learned Messiah. What are you doing? What are you doing? He says, you're still walking in the futility of your minds. You're still walking in the darkness of your understanding. You're still estranged. You're still ignorant because you're still callous. So what are you doing? He said, you've not so learned Messiah. He says now, and then we're going to see through the next verses, you can see that if you've heard him, if you've heard Messiah and were taught by him, then you must put off your former way of life. That's what he's going to talk about in the next 11 verses here. He said, look, if indeed you have heard him and were taught by him as truth is in Yeshua. Yeshua said, I am the truth. Torah is in Messiah Yeshua, the way, the truth, the life, the word. He says, if indeed you have heard him and were taught by him, then you must do what? You must put off, with regard to your former way of life, the old man. So when it talks about burying the old man, it's talking about taking your former way of life. So how do you come in as a Gentile, make some very minor changes to your former way of life? When I say minor, meaning it may have been a major thing in your life to give up the drugs or the behavior or lifestyles. That's major, but that's the things that you shouldn't have been doing even in the former way of life. Even the world thinks those things are bad. But I'm saying is, you still come in wanting to continue acting and being a Gentile. He's saying, no, you need to have put off your former way of life. The old man being corrupted according to the desires of deceit. You deceived yourself that your way was right. And that you knew better and nobody could teach you and no one could show you. You needed no teacher. This is epidemic in the body right now. You know, it's funny, I'm going to have people say, oh, there the rabbi is, he's whining again. How do I say this right? On some levels, I care deeply about whether or not you have a teacher. On other levels, I don't care at all. And by that I mean, it's your problem, not mine. I can only encourage you so much. If I cared more, it would destroy me, if you understand what I'm saying. So on some levels, I have to just allow you that, well, it's your choice. You got to do what you got to do. So I would have to care a lot more deeply and take it much more personally to sound whiny about it. Because then it's about me somehow. No, I'm reading this to you. The reason your life is in the turmoil your life is in is because you've not done this. I don't know what else to say. Paul felt that way. He says, look, this is why your life is all screwed up, because you claim you believe in Messiah and you're still walking as a Gentile, which is futile. Look, he says in chapter 2, he says, in which you once walked as a Gentile in dead and trespasses, etc., according to the course of this world, as sons of disobedience. Because a Gentile is not obedient to Torah. That's the definition of Gentile. If you're obedient to Torah, you're Israel. Okay, we'll say it for the millionth time. There's no such thing as a Gentile believer. Okay? That's an oxymoron. It's not. It doesn't make any sense. The definition of the term, Gentile means non-believer outside the camp. Israel means believer inside the camp. And so you cannot be a Gentile believer. You can be a former Gentile who's now an Israelite believer. But you can't stay Gentile. And that's what Paul's been saying for a couple of chapters here. And he said it in Romans, the same thing. Stop trying to stay Gentile and be in the body at the same time. It's not possible. It causes division. Most of the division in the body is the people that have not rooted out. I'm going to say this hopefully in the right way. They've not rooted out the cancer that the mindset is of Christianity as a system. Okay? Because that system inside of you will continue to get you to think that you can be Gentile and still be okay. If there's any, and I've said this to my wife and the other leaderships on a regular basis, when somebody's having a real struggle, I say, because they've not rooted out the Christianity mindset out of their system. It's that mind that's futile. Because Christianity tells you he did it all for you. It's a completed work. Yes, they would like you to get off the drugs and stop sleeping around and do some of those things, but that's as far as it kind of goes. We're not submitting to the authority, which says, I want you to eat a certain way. I want you to observe certain days. I want you to treat each other with certain ways of treating each other. I want you to worship me a certain way. I mean, he tells you how the great commandment, love Elohim with all your heart and strength and love each other, right? Love your neighbors yourself. Okay, well, how do you do those things? He tells you exactly how he wants those things done. But that Christian mindset takes that all away. It's been nailed to the cross. It's done away with. That's the thing that's not been buried. You must completely bury what? Your former way of life, which was what? Gentile in its actions and thought processes. Now, am I talking down and judging Gentiles? No. Until he calls them, they were you. Just as I love you, I don't love you just because you're keeping commandments. I love you because I love you. You know, you're a person, you're a human being. We're supposed to love all of his creation. But realize that they, as long as they're still in that group, they're still walking in that way of life that you're supposed to have now put aside and buried as a former way of life for you. You're supposed to have put it aside, buried the old man. Why? Because you realized that was corrupt. What does corrupt mean? Okay, if I have a CD and it's got scratches on it, it's now corrupted and won't play right. All right? In other words, corrupt means it will no longer function as originally meant to function. That's what corrupt means. So that way of life, you realize, was corrupted. It didn't function the way the Creator intended it to function. So hopefully when you realize that, you decided to bury it and to put off your former way of life. He says, as we're continuing here in verse 21 again, if indeed you've heard him and put these things off, and then we get to verse 23, because we realize those things were corrupted. Why? It was corrupted because you had not only deceit from outside, but deceit from inside. Your own ego and pride lied to you and convinced you that you were okay when you weren't. That self-sovereignty is going to kill you worse than Hasatan ever could. I promise you that's your bigger problem. As a matter of fact, if you get the self-sovereignty thing worked out, Hasatan's got nothing to work with. Because now if you're fully submitted to Elohim, there's nothing there. He's got nothing to work with. You've got to get this self-sovereign thing worked out. It's the futility of your mind. Notice that Hasatan isn't mentioned anywhere in here. It's you in your choices, your decisions, and your walk, and your mindset, and your belief, and your actions. Now, we're going to get to the devil here in a second, a couple of more verses, and we'll see where he fits in. He says, but you are to be renewed in the spirit of your mind. What's the spirit? We're talking about that from the teachings called understanding the Ruach and the baptism of fire. Understanding that the spirit is the intrinsic nature of Elohim. He's saying, look, you're supposed to be renewing your mind so that it would be the mind of Yeshua, matching his intrinsic nature. Okay, we have the verses like in Philippians, says, let this mind be in you that was in Messiah Yeshua, Philippians 2:5, right? Okay, he says, so renew the spirit of your mind and that you put on the renewed man, which was created according to Elohim, in what? In righteousness and set apartness of the truth. The Torah is truth. The word is truth. We have that in the Tanakh. Psalm 119, verse 142 and verse 160 says that. He says, but you, this renewed man, oh, I hear all these Christians talking about, oh, that one new man and the renewed man, this whole new man. This new man is supposed to be created in accordance to righteousness. Righteousness and set apartness. What is the definition of righteousness and set apartness? Elohim defines it for us through the Torah, tells us what is right and what sets us apart. So this new man, this renewed man, is supposed to be created according to the Torah. Therefore, having put off the false, what was the false? The deceitful Gentile mindset way of life. Having put off the false, speak the Torah, speak the truth, speak Yeshua, each one with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. He says, be wroth, but do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your rage, nor give place to the devil. Ah, now the devil comes in. So when you are not walking in the completeness and the fullness of Messiah, when you're not walking in that renewed man, when you're still walking in the old mindset, you give place to the devil to encourage you to keep going on the wrong path. That's, remember I said earlier, if you've gotten that self-sovereignty thing completely settled, the devil's got nothing to work with. He says, don't give place to the devil. Let him who stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, so that he has somewhat to share with those in need. Let no corrupt word come out of your mouth, but only such as good for use of the building up, so as to impart what is pleasant to the hearers. And do not grieve the set-apart spirit of Elohim, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. You see, the set-apart spirit you received, you came into truth, but if you don't do what you were supposed to do, which was the whole point of this, you grieve the spirit. Okay, you grieve. Look, as a parent, when my children don't do what I tell them to do and it ends up hurting them and I know it's going to hurt them, it grieves me. Don't you think the Father's the same way? That it grieves him when he sees us doing the futility of our own minds. And we're supposed to no longer walk that way. He says, let all bitterness and wrath and displeasure and uproar and slander be put away from you, along with all evil. Oh, there's still bitterness and wrath and displeasure and uproar and slander in the body. Just go on Facebook. Look at anybody talking about any Torah topic, and you're going to find bitterness and anger and wrath and displeasure and uproar and everything you can imagine under the sun. And this is why I've told people over and over and over, even if you are technically correct, if you're doing it this way, you're still wrong. I'll say that again. Even if you are technically, scripturally accurate, because you were pointing out some point the other person pointed out incorrectly, if you're bitter and angry and full of displeasure and creating an uproar and all and slandering, meaning you're attacking the other person in a public way and causing them to be shamed in a public way, you are already absolutely wrong. You're actually more wrong than they were for being technically wrong. If you cannot communicate while maintaining the fruit of the Ruach, love, joy, peace, patience, etc., you are wrong. Even if you were right in terms of your accuracy and whatever point you were trying to make. No matter how right your point, if you do not maintain the fruit, you're still wrong. Okay? And we have to embrace that. And if we could just embrace that, then we would not be doing the things we're doing in public that's making the body so abused, really. Where the body's under in a condition of abuse. We have abused person syndrome in the body because we are basically abusing each other by viciously attacking anything and everything someone may even, I mean, even for asking a question, it's a legitimate question, somebody may mock that person saying, well, what's wrong with you? Don't you know, blah, 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 blah. You've seen that, right? They don't know. They're new. You didn't know. You were new. See, but, you know, that's why Abba says over and over and over again, don't forget where you came from. He says, remember, you were slaves in Egypt. So before you get all full of yourself, that's where you came from. All right? You think you're somebody? No, you were a slave in Egypt. Now, by my mercy and my compassion, I've called you out of that slavery. And then I've called you out of slavery. I've given you stuff, but not because you earned it and deserved it. I did it because I promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob I would do it. So let's not get all puffed up in thinking we're somebody and something special, et cetera, et cetera. And then start judging everybody else who is exactly where you were. None of us was born with an understanding of all this stuff perfectly. And so we have to be careful. He says, judge not lest you be judged. Because if you're going to judge others, he's going to judge you for doing that judging. Let's be careful with that. He says, look, be kind towards one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as Elohim also forgave you in Messiah. We could use a little bit more. Well, no. We could use a lot more kindness and tenderheartedness, forgiving one another as Elohim forgave us. Even if it's as simple as saying, forgive them, Father, they don't really know what they're doing at this point. Father, help them to see and help them to find a teacher that will lovingly and gently correct them and get them on the right path. And help them to not get attacked by every, you know, self-righteous, self-proclaimed understanding teacher on the internet who's going to just blast everybody that they think is wrong. Because that's wrong. Now, you want to do a teaching about it, all you teachers out there, good. Grab a microphone, put a camera on, and do a teaching that's out there for the public. Don't attack individuals. Don't get on Facebook and other places when somebody posts something like the Facebook. I call you guys Facebook trolls. You're just waiting for someone to post something so you can jump out from your under the bridge there in your in the muck, in the mud, in the murk, wherever you're hiding, so you can attack everybody and show everybody how smart you are and how stupid they are. Right? Is that what it looks like? Well, we got to stop doing that. I've had people post things and that are absolutely incorrect. You know what I do? I contact them privately. I send them a private message and say, I would love to speak to you about this thing. I think there's a little bit of confusion about the issue that we can talk about. I don't post that in the public posting and attack everybody. But see, we don't have a shame, honor mindset. We don't understand that that's shameful behavior. And they're trying to shame someone, that's Lashon Hara, that's evil speak. That's what the scripture says not to do. You are not to shame people. Let's go before the Father. Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King. Father, we are just so much still walking in the futility of our minds. And Father, we know that we need to come into unity and we know we need leadership, but we also know that there's a leadership vacuum out there right now. And what leadership there is, a lot of it is just not very good. And Father, help us, help everyone listening to us to look for, search out, and give them discernment to find those anointed appointed that are out there. Because you say that you gave some to be these things until the unity. So we're not there yet. There must be emissaries and prophets and evangelists and shepherds and teachers out there right now. Father, help the people in your body to find those people that you've set apart and anointed and appointed to do these roles. Father, help us to understand that we needed to have put off the way of life that former way of life that we had been walking in, to no longer walk in those things and that mindset and those behaviors, but rather to renew our minds and then our behaviors so that we could be raised and created this new man created in righteousness and set apartness of truth. Father, we need you to guide us, to lead us, to inspire, to teach and instruct, and Father, to help us to let go of that self-sovereignty, to let go, to truly trust you and release and let go. Father, that is our hardest part, to let go of that authority in ourselves, to be able to trust. We've been so abused and so neglected and so controlled and so dictated to and so every possible bad way of leadership that it is so hard for us to trust even you, to know that we can fully let go and release and trust you completely. Father, help heal that pain and that wound in all of us, that wounded heart that has such trouble just trusting in you fully. And be able to let all that fear and doubt go so that we can truly be raised up and lifted up. As it was talking about that he also went down into the lower parts of the earth, that we feel like we were in those lower parts, Father, to be then lifted up. Help us to truly let go so you can lift us up. So, Father, we thank you. We thank you for your love, for your compassion, for your mercy, for calling us and being so patient with us in the foolishness that we do, that you would give us opportunities again and again to walk worthily of the calling, to produce fruit worthy of repentance, that you might forgive us and that you may restore us to favor so that we can continue the journey of growth and transformation into the image of your Son, into the image of Yeshua. So, Father, we thank you, and thank you, and we praise you and give you all the glory and all the honor. And all things that we do in authority as Yeshua has instructed us. So it's in his name and his authority that we come now and praise you. In the name of Yeshua, our Messiah, together we say, Amen, ve'amen.